See? It's a good thing I freaking checked.
Yes, it's a good thing. Yes.
That should just be the pre-episode zero. It should just be us screwing up the...
It's you trying to say that sentence like four times in a row and then cuts to the show.
So, all right, it's 9:04.
Yep. I'm ready, man. I've been ready.
You guys are all ready?
Since first call.
I'm ready.
All right. Yeah, I've been ready since, I don't know, just now. Okay. Welcome, everyone, to Talk Around Riyadh, the Wheel of Time showcast. I am your host, Joe Perry, here with my co-host, Jen Iscrow. How you doing tonight, Jen?
I'm doing great, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. And our other co-host, Tom Kokoza. How you doing, Tom?
Oh, Joe, you know, I'm really excited to be here tonight. I feel proud and undefeated.
Well, that's good. And you've got a new computer waiting outside your front door.
Waiting outside my front door. Not ready yet. So this should be the last time that I have to worry halfway through the show. I'm just going to lose internet.
Yes.
That's cool.
Well, actually, you didn't have any computer problems today, Tom. So, you know, that's a good start.
That's true. That's
my power has actually been flittering on and off in the last couple of days. So if I totally disappear, you know what happened to me.
Oh,
that's probably not won't, but.
Graboids.
Okay.
Snakeoids.
All right, so let's get into it. We've actually got some good news this week. It was kind of a lull in the last couple of weeks, but we got some good news this week. So the first piece of news was from whatseries.com. So they posted a tweet. I don't know if they got it from an article or just from another tweet or something, but it was a mayor from one of the Czech towns where I guess they're filming the Wheel of Time, or were filming the Wheel of Time. And he's talking about how they built stone buildings and they had to destroy them. I think they said the filmmakers built a beautiful stone village, which will unfortunately be destroyed during filming. Mm-hmm. So this is from a while ago. So this is back last year when they first started filming. So this isn't anything new. And I think there was also a comment about how the mayor said that the fire department helped and they got to see the monsters that Maureen fought. Go ahead, Jen. What do you want to say?
That's what it said? They got to see the monsters that she fought?
Well, this was a comment. I think Watt Series made a comment about that. I didn't see any direct quotes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
So, no, I was just going to say that they think it's Edmunds Field, but we saw the Edmunds Field village and it's not...
Not stone.
Is there a word that means stone but also might mean something else that was mistranslated? Because everything else in there sounds like Edmunds Field. Burning, monsters, Moraine, if that's like accurate.
Yeah, I don't speak Czech, so.
Joe, you've been trying to learn for the last like 3-4 months now, and I'm surprised that you're not there yet. It is a possibility from what I've read about the story and for what I saw in the original article, there's definitely a possibility that it is mistranslated, that it's not a stone village, that it's just something else. But I think that it is, and I don't think then that it is Edmunds Field, right? My actual first instinct when I heard like stone village and the fact that there was fire was that this might be Whitebridge, right? Which does get burned in with the battle with the Myrdrill and Tom or whatever happens after that. Because it's too early in the production, from what I read in the article, if I'm remembering correctly, for it to be cities towards the end of the book, right? It could be Shadow Ghoul, depending on how Shadow Ghoul. It could be Shadow Logoth, rather, depending on how.
Yeah, that's my thought.
How early they do that in the show, so it could be that as well. That has monsters, that has destruction, that has stone.
That's true.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I thought. Like, I know they think it's Edmunds Field, and it could be the translation. Who knows? You know, I think somebody even volunteered and said, like, send me the original, and I'll look at it, but I never heard anything back from them. But it could be Shadow Logoth. I mean, it could just as easily be that, because that's early on in the show, like you said, Tom, and there's Moraine fighting Trollocs, but it's not really a village, though. That's the only thing. I mean, they could change what Shadow Logoth is.
Yeah, but that could just be the word he chose to use when he's describing.
Again,
he's not
going to
say, he's not going to say, like, large broken down city from ancient, you know, like he's not going to get into that. He might just use the word village. But but I mean, she could be throwing fire around at that point too. They might change the channeling she's doing. Just because she didn't channel in the book like that doesn't mean she won't on the show, because that's going to be an impressive thing to see on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to chalk it up to, you know, translation, and it's most likely Edmunds Field. Because we did see, didn't we see pictures of the same village, right? Like kind of burned out. We saw other other photos. I think Narc had posted them on the Daily Trollic of the same village, but it looked like it was all run down and burned out. So
yeah. Right.
That might have been what they were talking about.
It's true. Although we did conjecture on earlier episodes that they were going to use the same Evans Field village like as other villages over the course of the series. Different angles, different things, so that on this side it looks like thatched roofs, and on that side it's got long eaved roofs like something outside of Faldara. So yeah. It's possible that it's not that. It's possible that it is. So unfortunately, we don't have a lot of conclusions for you here, but this is an interesting tidbit, I think. And
yeah, it was nice. And it's old, but it's a good one. An oldie, but a goodie, right?
Yeah, like me. So what I do like about this is that basically everyone that I've seen that's known about this story, or even the people that are talking about it now in like the live chat, are like, well, it can't be this. It has to be this. Well, it can't be that. It has to be that. Like, everyone's like, well, the clues that they've given means that it's got to be one of a bunch of different things. And there's always something contradictory about it. So that pleases me, because I feel like one of the things that I've kind of harped upon about in prior episodes, is like, I want there to still be a sense of theorizing as the show goes on. And I love the fact that we're mm-hmm. doing that for every snippet of news that we get.
That's the fun, man. That's the fun of it.
Yep.
That's why we're doing this.
Yeah.
That and all the cash, right?
Yeah. What? You guys are getting paid?
Yeah. Oh, no, we're not getting paid. Next piece of information. No. So next bit of news was a little more interesting news, and at least I enjoyed it a lot more. So Sally Richardson Whitfield, who is the director for episodes 5 and 6, she did an Instagram interview for the American Black Film Festival Insider Talk series. And she said a lot of nice things that I was really excited about and pleased about. And I kind of wanted to get your guys' opinion on this. So I'm going to start just going through the ones that I wrote down. And if I missed any, of course, you know, you feel free to jump in. So the first thing that caught my attention was she talked about how normal TV show, and she's directed a lot of television, 1 hour episode television type shows, similar to, you know, similar style to The Wheel of Time, I guess, in that nature. So she said normal shows take about 7 to 9 days to film per episode. She says the Wheel of Time episodes, the two that she directed, took 15 to 20 days per episode. So what do you think about that, Jen?
That sounds good. It sounds like they're taking the time to make sure everything is exactly right. They're not rushing through it. I mean, they're in a lot of different locations, it seems like, too, probably per episode. And yeah, I mean, I'm happy to hear that. Sounds like they're really putting a lot of intricate time into each episode.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you got to figure practical effects and special effects. Both take much longer to film, to set up, to account for, especially she talks about in the interview as well, that a lot of she did multiple segments that had large amounts of characters in them. And that also takes more time to kind of set up, especially if they're going to be doing complex things like battle, which we assume that they are, depending on which of our episode breakdowns you like the most. It depends on which battle that is. But so, yeah, I think that it's very interesting. But yeah, a normal, I guess, hour-long episodic television show is filmed more or less on like a weekly schedule, right? So more or less a week at a time, they'll get an episode out. But the more complex it is, the more different sets, as Jen mentioned, different locations or practical and special effect things that they need, the longer it's going to be. Like those kind of things can take days to film 1 5-minute to 10-minute segment of film, right?
Yeah, she did mention that there was lots of locations in remote places. So I imagine that factors into it as well. But it's just the scope too, I imagine. Because, all right, so just getting a little bit into the scope and maybe why it's taking so long to film the episodes is that she mentioned that there were 3 or 4 sequences that she shot with about 300 people in them.
Right.
Yeah. So knowing that she's directing episodes 5 and 6, which is Blood Calls Blood and The Flame of Tarvalin, and I don't know if you guys still have your episode breakdowns up, but what do you think those could be, those sequences?
I had ideas, but now I'm thinking that my ideas were more in the episode four range. I was going to say the city of Camelin, just in general.
Yeah.
Like a big shot of him being in the city with everyone out there for the bringing in of Loghain, or the capturing of Loghain, that battle. Those were the two ideas I had, but I don't know if those are going to be happening so late in the season. Who knows? Or they could be. I don't know. Yeah, those are the two things I wrote down.
It's so difficult at this point when we don't know where they're going to end. So how about you, Tom?
I think that the capital of Loghain is going to be one of them. The way I think I had episode 5 would be very Loghain-centric, is I think how I had it broken down. So I think you might see flashbacks to his being him being captured. I also think that you see flashbacks in those episodes to the Blood Snow. I think that there will be a origin of Moraine in those two episodes. So I think you might see some of that combat as well. And you may even see that over multiple episodes or in kind of different segments of things. So I think that those are the battle scenes that you're going to see in those episodes for my breakdown.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had two different breakdowns that I kept changing, but I do have like a New Spring flashbacks going on at that time too. And thought, you know, that could be, you know, if we get the Blood Snow, that could be then. It could be Camlin if we're on a different timeline here. Also, it could be if we're doing a little, you know, higher paced, faster paced timeline, it could be Faldara. It could be the Amarlin arriving in Faldara. I would imagine there'd be a large group because you're getting her whole entourage. Plus, I'm sure there's a lot, you know, all the people who live in Faldara would be out in the streets and whatnot. So could be that too.
True.
Or it could be White Cloak scene, White Cloak army.
Oh, very, very true.
Could be a lot of things. A lot of different things there. So she also mentioned that there was a new character that is a fantasy character. This one is kind of interesting, and it's very open to interpretation. So, Tom, did you have any thoughts on what she meant by a new fantasy character?
Yeah, it's Loial. And, I mean, there's a lot of other options that I've heard people discuss. And I think those are all cool options, but it's Loial. I'm just like 99.6% certain on that one. Just because of the way that she described what she had to do for that guy. And the fact that it was like costuming and it was like a bunch of different aspects to creating this kind of fantasy character. And I know some people, I've heard some people suggest like the Green Man as a possibility. The Green Man doesn't wear clothes. And then the same thing for some of the other characters that I've heard made mention. Now, it could be somebody else. And I'm usually wrong about these things, and I'm willing to admit that. But it's Loial. I'm putting money on it.
That's who I first put down. Because if we're saying like the sequences, the large people, 300 people sequences is Camlin, then that could be Loial. I agree. I kind of agreed with you there. I couldn't think of any new fantasy. I immediately did not think she meant just like another regular character. When she said fantasy character, I was thinking of like a new creature. And it wouldn't be a Murdrel, it wouldn't be a Trolloc. I started like trying to think of Shadowspawn, but at that point, I think there's no new Shadowspawn introduced that far into the season, or there wouldn't be, unless they're holding off like Drakkar or something like that. And Dana keeps pointing out in chat, I know she said this before, that it could be Grom if we're that far into the Great Hunt already.
I don't think we're going to be anywhere near that far into the Great Hunt at that point.
Yeah.
So I think we could start piecing things better together, right? Because she's the one directing the episode with the Waystone Portal Gate, which I think people are leaning more towards a Waygate now. And the field that they were shooting it in seems like they were coming out of at Faldara. So she might be in that Camlin Faldara. We might be in that part of the story. Mm-hmm. This is like seeming like we're getting more and more information. It seems like this is where we are in episodes 5 and 6. We're either starting in Camlin or we're getting to Camlin and then we're going to Faldara.
I agree. I wouldn't even consider a Grom like a character.
Yeah.
Like in the story. It's a monster. I would consider that more like a monster, but Loial appearing. I feel like the timing is right. And just as soon as she said it, Loial just, I was like, oh, she's talking about Loial. That's a character in the story. That's a fantasy character. That's what I just assumed. Yeah. I don't like the black people are saying Black Wind too. I don't consider that to be like a character in the story. And the way she said it, I definitely think Loial.
I think so too. And nothing else really that big that I pointed out. She mentioned lots of horses and carriages, things like that. I mentioned remote places, shooting in a lot of remote places. So anything else you guys that I missed?
No.
You wanted to talk about?
That's all. You hit everything I wanted to talk about.
Okay. And there was one last piece of news that we got today. And I know, Tom, you caught this one. So I don't know if you want to start with this.
So the Hollywood Reporter reported that the Czech film industry has petitioned Prague to reopen, right? They feel like they can, they came up with a plan that they feel like they can do it safely, that they really want to start filming in the country again, and that they have a plan that, you know, that would include, you know, temperature screenings and face masks and social distancing on set. And then it specifically mentions Amazon Productions like Carnival Row and The Wheel of Time as things that they want to kind of get started again. So I think it's very exciting and interesting because we want to get things started. But I do think even if the plan, which has just been submitted, does get approved, we also have to wonder, does Amazon feel like we're ready to start filming again just because Prague does, right?
You know, I thought of that too. When I was first reading it, I was thinking the exact same thing. Czech Film Commission wants to try to get their filming back open, and then I was thinking specifically of like Rafe first, and then Amazon. Like, do they want to, even if they Czech opens back up for filming, will Rafe and Amazon execs say to make that decision? Okay, let's start doing it, or will they be a little more cautious?
Yeah, I will say this. I know Rafe's the showrunner, but if Amazon tells him to go get started, I think he's gonna go okay, right? But
Geeky Ari's making a great point in Discord. She says also it depends on if the crew and the cast can like get out of the countries and get there.
Yeah, exactly right. But I think it's an exciting first step. Let's put it that way. That at least the Film Commission feels like they have a viable plan to reopen. And whether Prague feels that they're correct is, I guess, step two on that process. But, you know, depending on where you are, you know, listening to this, or, you know, where you are, where you live, like, we're all experiencing this pandemic in different ways. And truth be told, I don't have a good sense of where Czech is, how they are. I haven't really been checking in, but I know how we are in New York. And it seems crazy to me that people could be talking about things like this, but there are a lot of places around the world, and even in the United States, where they're ready to start reopening things. Like, they feel like they have it under enough of control. So if that gets approved, and if Amazon's, you know, insurance and risk people go, okay, we think we're ready, then you go back into like the production logistics of getting people out. But I will say, I think that if Amazon says, yes, let's start doing it, then they have enough money to kind of buy special exemption for actors to get out and start working again, you know? So
yeah, there was, I'm seeing some comments. Well, we can kind of just, Amazon can ship them Prime to check.
Right. Exactly. Right. Like my new computer.
Yeah. Two days free shipping. We'll get Yosha there. it's going to need a bigger box, but, man. If they do open the Czech opens up filming, do you think they'll, Amazon and Rafe and them will take advantage right away? Do you think they'll be cautious?
They'll probably be a little cautious, but I think they'll probably want to get back on schedule ASAP. So as soon as it's safe, I'm sure they'll have to take precautions on set and everything, but I think they'll try to get back over there as fast as they can.
Yeah. Well, we'll all cross our fingers. I mean, things are getting better. That's the truth. So, I mean,
yeah.
I know over here, we just, you know, they just decided to, you know, cancel school for the rest of the school year, which was kind of shitty, but things are getting better. So we just got to kind of be patient and stay the course, as they say.
That's it.
All right. So that's our news for the day. And now it's time to get into our main topic of the night. We will be discussing the false dragon, Loghain Eblar, hero, Patsy. That's all I got. Were there any other options?
Sexy beast,
the professor. So I started. Yes. I'm sorry. I'm going to go off on a little off. So I started watching the Money Heist show with him in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good, actually. I would recommend it. I watched the first few episodes.
Okay.
Good it's stuff. On Netflix, right?
Yep, it's a Netflix show. I didn't realize there's like four seasons of it. I had no idea it was that long so far. So.
It's a very long heist. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I was I was looking him up while I was waiting before, and I think his name is pronounced Alvaro, not Alvaro.
Oh, that makes sense.
There was Alvaro Morte, because there's a little tilde. Is that? No, that's the swirly one. I don't know. There's an accentuation on the A, the first A of Alvaro.
Yeah, right, because isn't there, right, Alvaro Espinoza, right, the baseball player?
I don't know.
It wasn't Alvaro Espinoza, right, Tom? It was Alvaro Espinoza.
Oh, I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Come on, Tom. Baseball, just because they're not playing doesn't mean you can forget all about it.
I'm sorry. I forgot about Alvaro Espinoza. I apologize, Mr. I apologize, Mr. Espinoza.
He's a big fan of our podcast until now.
Yeah. He just lost a fan.
Jen, we just lost a big fan. Jen, do you want to bring us in with the first appearance of Loghain Eblar in The Eye of the World?
So I'm just going to read a little bit of this. It's in Camlann when Rand sees him in the cage. Said he was not close enough to see Loghain's face as he had wanted to, but suddenly he thought he was as close as he cared for. The false dragon was a tall man with long dark hair curling around his broad shoulders. His clothes seemed ordinary, a cloak and coat and breeches that would not have caused comment in any farming village. but the way he wore them, the way he held himself, Loghain was a king in every inch of him. And that's basically it. Everyone's yelling at him, and he's just staring at them and laughing. It's a pretty good description, I think.
First meeting. So I guess I'll ask this now instead of getting into it later. Do you think... So I think we're all on the page of that this won't be our first meeting with Loghain in the TV show.
Right.
That kind of bothers me thinking about it. You know, when I started doing the research and stuff for this episode, I was thinking about that. Like, this is such a great first appearance for him, and that's going to be taken away from us. Well, and that kind of makes me a little sad.
Yeah, it does. But go, Jen. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, I was just going to say maybe there'll be something similar to this when we first see him, but it won't be from Rand's point of view. We still could get like that feeling when we first see him.
Yeah. It's going to be a totally different, first impression. All right. So just a quick description. I think you really got into it pretty well there though, Jen, but he is, you know, we want to get in very detailed and technical. He's about 6'2" with dark complexion and brown eyes, and his hair is dark and curled down to his broad shoulders. So I wonder if we're going to get Alvaro, in a wig or not with the long curly hair.
I don't know.
All right, so some of his background. So Loghain is a minor Gheldon and nobleman, so he's from Gheldon. He had small estates in the mountain, he was born in 971, which makes him 27 at the beginning of Eye of the World. So there's a big drastic change from the character cast, because like Alvaro Marte is in his 40s. So big change there. For some reason, I always like to point out people's ages and heights when people are trying to cast, and I'm like, no, he's too old. No, he's too short. I don't know what's wrong with me. So he begins channeling at around the age of 21. In 995, he declares himself the Dragon Reborn, at which point King Johannan of Gheldon and the Crown High Council strip him of his title and estates, though Loghain kept his sigil, which is 3 golden crowns in a field of blue. According to the Companion, Loghain is ranked ++2 in the One Power. God, I hate this stupid scale, which puts him on a level with... Go ahead, John.
No, go ahead, finish, and then I'm going to say it.
It puts him on a level with Demondred, Samael, and Mazrim Taim.
Every person that we've done, I feel like I read, they're one of the most powerful channelers ever, except for like 3 other people. There's no, like, everybody is like the greatest ever, but then there's 3 other guys that are better than them. It's weird. I don't know.
Yeah. Every person they meet is the most powerful channeler since whenever.
Right,
because they just keep meeting more and more powerful people.
Well, then you have Morghese.
Like, I was upset.
You have Morghese, who is unpowerful at the minimum level of channeling power. Yeah, I mean, there's 2 things about that. Like, yes, it's a little bit like, you know, a little ridiculous, but, you know, the other thing is like, well, they wouldn't be telling a lot of stories about the people who are just like, hey, there's a dude. Yeah, he can channel a little bit. You know, he's all right. He's probably not going to do that much, except until the last book when he does, but whatever.
Yeah, I never got the impression when I first, like earlier on in the books, that he was that powerful. But I mean, and then sometimes, although I have to say, sometimes the Companion kind of contradicts stuff in the text, which I think is a little confusing. So, but yeah, so he's ++2. So put that in your mind, ++2. That scale just drives me nuts. So he also has the talent to see Tavirin. So my question for you is, do you think that we'll see this in the show? And then how do you think that they'll portray it on the screen, on TV? Tom, tell me what you think.
Yes, I do think that you'll see it on the show. I don't know if you're... I don't think you're going to see it in the first season.
Really?
No, I think... Because I think that that is the perfect kind of thing. They're going to flash back to that scene from Loghain's point of view once you find out his point of view, which is like later on. So I think that you can't show it then, because then it ruins the storyline of the Eye of the World. Right?
Well, wait. All right, I want to counter you there. So I was going to ask a follow-up question as to, do you think they won't show it for the benefit, for the protection of Loghain or for Rand? Because Loial already in Camelin, shortly right after Rand sees him, or it might be before it, I can't remember, but right around that same time is when Loial says that they're, you know, identifies them as Tavirin.
It's true. That's true. I think it's a different thing, though, with Loial saying, Taviran, you're all Taviran, like, and, like, theorizing that that's what's happening, because he doesn't, like, he doesn't have a sense where he goes, yes, you are. He's saying, like, this is the explanation, as opposed to Loghain seeing him flare up like the brightest sun in the middle of a crowd of people. I think that if you just cut to Loghain's point of view and just saw Rand in a crowd of like thousands of thousands glowing with this huge bright white light shining and rippling off of him, people might go, I bet he's the guy. Right? And like, so I don't think they'll do it. And I do think that that is a great payoff later on when you get to see like in the beginning, when you see Loghain for the first time in the books, which probably won't be the first time in the show, but I think that the beat will still work. It's like, oh, you expect to see a defeated man, a man who has been bested by the Aes Sedai and gentled or about to be gentled or whatever, shielded at least in the books. And he's not. And he laughs. He's laughing at this crowd jeering him. And like, you think, oh, maybe this guy's a villain, or maybe this guy is just somebody who's, you know, untouchable by, like, you know, the normal trials and tribulations of man, whatever. But then you get it from his point of view, and it's such a great payoff where he's just like, they made all this fuss about me, and there's this guy, this, I don't know who he is, but I just see this guy who's going to mess this world up so much more than I ever could. And that's what makes him laugh. And I love that that is a payoff and not something that you find out right away.
How does Loghain know that he can see what he's even looking at? Has he ever seen the Taviran before?
Well, that's a holy shit. That's a great question. So yeah, right.
Like,
I think so. It doesn't say. So I think in the text or somewhere, it doesn't say that he knew he was Taviran. It says that he knew that he was going. And I think I put this somewhere else in my notes here, that he knew Rand would end up causing more chaos than he ever did. I don't think it's specifically like he said, "Oh, that guy's Taviran." He just, like, I guess, saw something. Some sort of bright light coming from Rand or whatever it was, the visual was, and he just knew that this guy was going to do so much, you know, cause so much chaos. Okay. And craziness.
But then I think that, like, in if they do that scene the same way in the show, I don't think that there's, like, any way to communicate that without words. You know what I mean? If that's the first time he's seeing a Taviran and, like, to show him lighting up and have no one explain what's happening, I think that would just be weird.
No, that's a good point. How do you think they're going to show the... If they do show it, let's say it is in a flashback or we get another perspective at some point, how do you think they'll show it? Do you think they'll just have him, like, glowing or?
I don't know. Yeah. Do they say it in the book? What do they explain what he sees in the book?
Yeah, it's like I don't have it in front of me.
I think Swan mentions, right?
Right. It's like, okay. It's like a glowing light with like you almost see the threads of the pattern wrapping around them, right? And that the stronger Taviran you are, the brighter that halo around you is. So Rand really, like, shines. Like, it like blocks out, like, the sunlight. It's so bright.
It's literally like you see it with your eyes, or is it just like a feel? Could it just be?
No,
like,
I think
a
you
feeling?
See it. Well, it could be, but I feel like it's described as an aura, like a visual aura.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd have to pull up. I think Swan's the one who describes it. I know that, okay. But I just don't know. I'd have to look it up and see what she says. So let's continue on. So that was some background. So let's get into Loghain during the Eye of the World. So, and this is all story, right? We don't really get any kind of first person perspectives on any of this. This is just what we hear in stories and rumors. And then we kind of find out later on. So he quickly gains a following and successfully fights a battle in Gelden. All kinds of rumors swirl around this victory, some saying that Aes Sedai were killed, and some even saying that they went over to his side. Oh, foreshadowing, huh? But all agree that he won the battle. He attempts to move his army towards Tyr. So I put a little question mark around this. You think possibly to try to take Kalendor to fulfill one of the prophecies? Any opinions on that? Why
sense.
He was moving to Tyr?
He actually says later on in the books that was his that exactly was his intent. Was he knew that the prophecy didn't make sense and that he didn't know, like, you know, whatever about the people of the dragon, whatever. But he figures if I can just take Kalendor, they'll figure out a way to make it fit the prophecy. So, which I love. That's one of the things I kind of love about it. So he's enough. He reads enough to know, like, what the prophecies of the dragon are, know that that's a part of it. And he doesn't, like, he's so pragmatic. And it's something that I love about him is that it's just like, hey, look, if I figure it out, people are going to figure out a way to make that make sense because I did it. right? So that is his plan, is eventually to go and get Kalidor.
Okay. That's what I thought too. I didn't remember from the future. I try not to go too far ahead, but just because I don't remember that far ahead. So he does fight a large battle. So on his way to Tyr, he fights a large battle near Lugard, and that's where he's defeated. So I think we all are in agreement. I think the whole entire Twitter of Time community is in agreement that we will probably see this battle on television. Anyone think otherwise before I move on?
No, I hope not otherwise.
Or at least part of the battle. So after being captured, they say it takes 6 Aes Sedai to keep him shielded from channeling. The Aes Sedai take him to Tar Valon while stopping in each town during the journey to display him as a trophy of their victory against the false dragon. And one of these stops is the aforementioned Camelin, where we as readers first meet him along with Rand. While being paraded through the streets, Rand sees him. He sees him laugh as Loghain appears to be looking right at him. And then this is where we learn later on that Loghain can see Tavirin. And the reason he was laughing is because he saw that and he knew that he would cause more trouble and chaos than he ever did. So we kind of talked about that part already. And then I'm going to just jump into the great hunt of what we get of him. So at this point, Loghain has reached the White Tower and he's been gentled. And I think we talked in earlier episodes about possibly seeing him gentled on screen or not. I think we were kind of split back and forth whether that was going to be shown.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys want to revisit that at all.
I think if he's going to have an expanded role and we're going to see him before Camelin and see him fighting, see him get taken by the Aes Sedai, I feel like we kind of need to see him be gentled because he feels like he's going to be, for him to just kind of disappear off the radar after that point would be weird if we've been following him up to that point. So I hope they show it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on the fence about that. I don't think I really need to see it. Either way, I think it'll be fine. The important part, I think, is I guess what they're trying to go for, right? Because in the books, we kind of just see captured Loghain. And even when he's captured before he's gentled, he's still very proud and very, they mentioned, you know, as your description said, he still looks like every inch of like a leader and a lord. And then when we meet him later on in the Great Hunt, that's quite the opposite. So I think we just need to get that contrast. And as long as they get that, I think we'll be fine. And how they do it, it doesn't really matter to me as long as they can get that point across. Because, I mean, when they see him in the White Tower, he's already been gentled. Egwene and Elaine, while they're studying as novices, they see Loghain walking on the tower grounds, and an Accepted appears and leads him off into the gardens. He seems kind of like beaten down. And then Elaine comes across him later on sitting on a bench in the courtyard and he's crying. And then he notices that she's seen him and he runs away. So I think as long as they get that point across, the difference between pre-gentling and post-gentling and what that does, I think that's really the important part.
I know, but this is like, now it's a TV show and everything is visual. So I feel like they really need to, I mean, I guess either way, like we'd get it, but I think they can make the gentling even more like fantastical. That's not the word I want to use, but impressive than what it actually is, which is kind of boring, I guess, to watch. I think a lot of the channeling where they're like two people channeling against each other is just like two people, like you said. I'm just going to use this example of Nynaeve and Mogedion, and it's just like two women staring at each other from across the room and like nothing's happening. They're going to have to change stuff like that and make it a little more impressive for the screen. So they could do that with gentling too.
You know what they should do since you brought that scene up? I know Tom will agree with me on this, but the Nynaeve and Mogedion scene should be just like... Lopan.
Yeah. That's exactly what I picture. Minus the little figures fighting, but yeah.
Finger wiggles?
Yeah, yes, I want the finger wiggles. So what I think, and that is the first scene I think it's really the first scene that I read in the books that I completely, like in my head, storyboarded, did camera angles, what the effects look like, etc. was the Nynaeve Mogedion confrontation. It's the best, but I think that you're going to do a lot of camera pans and then like, and this is how I pictured that fight because it's in a museum and there's pillars and things everywhere. Camera pans, and as the camera like passes something that like blocks its vision, you cut to like what the channelers see, and then it passes again, you cut to what like is actually happening. The thing I love about the Nynaeve Mogedion is that it's so dramatic, but it's also like if someone just walked in, it's very comical because it's just two women just looking at each other and maybe like putting their hands out, maybe, but really just intensely concentrating.
Sweating.
Right. So like, I think you're going to see a lot of that, like what channeling looks like to regular people and what it looks like to channelers. And like in the beginning, you're going to see both. I think you're going to see like some sort of like transition for that because it pays off later on when like you have characters who don't channel around characters who do channel. And that is a point of contention or a problem. I basically feel like if and when the series goes to the points where Matt has his own storylines, like you're never going to see the channeling in scenes with Matt. Because never sees them.
You mean yeah, we talked about that in our I think it was our second episode.
So I do think that you're gonna see that. In regards to what we're talking about specifically here, I'm sorry, you just got me all wound up.
It's
all right. It's fine. It's a, like with the gentling, yeah, I think that you can make that very, very dramatic. And yeah, it's a relatively simple, I guess, procedure, right? And kind of the connection to the source. But you can make that very, very dramatic, and you can make that as as positive or negative a scene as you want it to be. And I think when we talked about this earlier, I said that it is something I don't know if they're going to put in the screen because it's so traumatic and it's such a drastic thing and it's so like stark that it can make people unsympathetic to the Aes Sedai in a way that they shouldn't be in the beginning. I think that if you think that they're bad in the beginning, then you don't care that there's even worse ones. Right? Like, well, they're all bad. Maybe they deserve to go down. And like, that's not the point of view
Yeah, they have to be careful about how they portray. If they're going to put more Loghain in here, they're going to have to be very careful on how they portray him just because of that. You don't want to make him a hero right away. Because in the beginning, you think the false dragons, you think they're kind of bad people. And then you meet Loghain and you still don't know what to make of him. You know, he doesn't seem like a bad person, but you don't know. Just see him from a distance, and Rand just gets his impressions from how he looks. And then you meet him, you know, after he's gentled and he's sad and he's depressed. And then you meet him shortly after that when he's traveling with Swan and Min and Lian, and he's still kind of a jerk. So you still don't even know what to make of him. But so I think they have to be very, very careful about how they portray him, because you're right, Tom. You don't want to make him seem too – you don't want people cheering for him right away and then think that the Aes Sedai are all bad people and such. So.
Yeah, I do like how Loghain doesn't become, a fully fleshed character until after he is healed. You know, he's always somebody that you see from someone else's point of view.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get him from like Swan's point of view and Min's point of view later on. So,
but even then, that's all before he's healed. It's not until after.
That's true. It's still before he's healed.
Yeah. Even, and like, they don't know what to think of him. They're threatened by him because he's a big, strong man. And they think that he's prone to violence. And again, they have a prejudiced notion of the fact that he's a false dragon. And so is probably a bad person.
Yeah. Badger's making a good point. He asks, you know, does he ever become a fully fleshed character? And to be honest with you, I never thought he did. I was never like a huge Loghain fan. Even when, you know, they started pitting, you know, him and Tame against each other, you know, I was like, okay, Loghain's cool. He's the good guy. But he really didn't have much depth to him in my, in my impression of him. So
I always liked Loghain. I think that's, but I'm sorry, I cut you off, Joe.
No, no, I was just going to say, I think that's why Rafe kind of wants to, I think Rafe identified that as something that needed to be addressed in the series. And that's something he's going to work on.
Yeah, I think that Loghain, to me, Loghain becomes a fully fleshed out character. And I do think that, I mean, he's not fully fleshed out to the extent that some of the other characters are. But Loghain became like somebody that had a personality of his own in the last books. And I think that it starts in The Gathering Storm. When he and Rand defeat like the attack on the manor, right? The Gathering Storm, or is that the Knife of Dreams, rather? With the attack on the manor, and then the after effect where he's like Rand's going crazy and like is gonna kill him or whatever,
that Death Gates?
Yeah, but he's like, I get it. You're stronger than me. You don't have to like hold the power to prove it. And it's like he's not interested in having like a dick measuring contest about it. And that was like the first element of him that was like, okay, like he's like the only like male channeler who doesn't need to be the boss all the time. And then he has the awesome line where he goes, weep, but weep on the march to Tarmageddon, right? When he's talking to the sea folk. Like, that's when I like, okay, I'm all in on him. Because
yeah,
he is pragmatic in a way that a lot of characters aren't. And he shows that throughout the whole series, but you never see anything from his point of view, really. Even when they escape from the tower, and then, you know, it's Swan, Leanne, and Min, and he, and he's like kidnapped, he's stealing the horses, and he's just trying. He doesn't, he's not worried about, like, his place in history or, like, what other people think or any of these other things. He's worried about, like, what am I going to do to survive and make this be, like, the best outcome possible. And I think towards the end, like, you find out that he does have some kind of, like, real true steel inside of him, and the fact that he's able to resist being turned for so long. And even when he is, I guess, slightly tainted by that procedure, he's able to fight it off at the end.
I always got the impression that that has to do with the strength and the power, that the more strong you are in the power, the harder it is to turn you to the shadow.
I think that's a part of it, but I thought that was...
Yeah.
And I think that might be said specifically in The Companion, but I think that I do think that you're supposed to get a sense of the fact, and you do get a sense from the other people. Again, he is somebody that's constantly interpreted by the people around him. The people that follow him at the Black Tower don't follow him because he's not Tyene. They follow him because he is Loghain, right? And that is a difference.
Huh. Oh, okay. I never thought of it that way. I almost thought that they followed him. I almost thought it was actually the opposite, that he's a powerful guy and he's pretty strong. He kind of seems like a, I don't know. It's hard. I do think there's a lot lacking there, though, in his development. And that's maybe why
I'm
a little lost on him, because, you know, Badger's pointing out that he always had the desire for glory. And, you know, that's what obviously led him to the situation he's in right now. But you never really get that from in the books, because I guess we don't get a lot of his side of the story, but that's something that Rafe's going to fix, so that's good. Yeah. Anything you wanted to add to that, Jen?
No, I'm just listening. I have a question that's tangentially involved to Loghain. I'm just waiting.
Go for
until...
it.
Okay. Not, it's,
just do it.
Has really nothing to do with Loghain. But why do only the men get tainted? Like, why does the Dark One choose to...
Okay, well, I'll do this real quick. So one of the plans to seal up the boar, Luz Theron said, let's go to the boar, we'll seal it up. The female Aes Sedai didn't want to do that, so he just decided to go and do it with male Aes Sedai.
Okay.
So that's, and when they sealed it up, the Dark One struck back at them, and he struck back only at the male half of the taint because it was only the male half that was used to seal the boar.
Okay, got it. I didn't know if... I thought they were... There was both of them there sealing it together, and he just chose to.
No. We're really going to have to get into that boar episode, Jen.
No,
you got a lot
are.
Of boar questions.
I got so many boar questions. You have no idea.
We don't want to bore everyone.
I'm drowning
though.
In boar questions. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So, cold open.
Anyway,
there was one last thing I wanted to talk about, Loghain. So there's this whole storyline later on that. I know it's later on past the Eye of the World and Great Hunt, but it technically kind of affects the pre-story. And I don't know if they're going to try to put this into the show maybe earlier on than we see it in the books. But there's that question, which is I know is later answered, that was Loghain set up, right? There's this whole storyline that Loghain claims that Loghain told her and Leanne that the Red Aja set him up as a false dragon. So the story goes that six Red Sisters shielded Loghain one night in Cozumel, not Mexico, about a year before he proclaimed himself the Dragon Reborn. They offered him the choice of immediate death or proclaiming him to be the dragon. He took the latter, of course. And for the next year, these Red Sisters helped him to avoid Aes Sedai by sending him messages whenever others were nearby. After he proclaimed himself the Dragon Reborn, they continued sending messages on the whereabouts of King Johanan and his armies. And then Loghain also claimed that he heard Elida's name mentioned in a matter that made him think she knew of the plot. This is something that's laid out. It's later proved to be false,
yes,
that it was all just a scheme by Swan.
Yep.
But do you think we'll get some of this? Do you think they'll start setting this up early on to kind of make it a mystery?
Why would they do that? Why would they set him up? Why would they do that to set him up?
Why would the Red Aja set him up?
Why would the Reds want to do that? Yeah.
I think to point out how bad men, to perpetuate the myth, well, not the myth, but it's kind of proven, but to perpetuate the story of men, male Chandlers being bad, and that they need to be there to protect the world from the male Chandlers.
So right. What did he think was going to happen at the end of this?
That he'd be the dragon? Gentle.
Well, he thought he would get revenge on the, that it would cause, so if this got out, that they was set up by the Red Aja, would discredit the Red Aja.
No. That's not what I mean.
It was all Oh, sorry.
I mean, what he before he knew that they were setting him up, he just thought that they were like helping him become the dragon.
I want to.
Well, he would die. They said they were going to kill him or proclaim yourself. They basically right. met him and said, "You will either kill you or you're going to proclaim yourself to be the dragon."
Right. I just want to be clear, right? So it is.
He got life out of it,
right? It's also okay. Right. To be clear, this is a plan that Swan comes up with because nobody knows that Swan and Leanna cannot lie once they are severed. They all assume that the oaths still hold true to them. So they come up with this plan to discredit the Red Ajah because of the split to try and get everyone that's rebelling to stay strong against Aladia, right? So this is something that they make up. It is not true. It does not happen. Yeah. So like any kind of logical inconsistencies that you may have with that plan, you can chalk up to the fact that it didn't really occur. But this is something that she cooks up to trick everybody else who just kind of take for granted the fact that if she says, yes, this definitely happened, people will go, well, it has to have had happened because she can't lie. But she can lie, and she is lying.
Yeah, and at the time, it's basically I think there's, you know, they're worried that the Saladar, Aes Sedai, the little tower is, you know, starting to lean towards, let's just go back to the White Tower and, you know, succumb to Elida. And this is her way of saying, getting them not to.
Right.
Is Swan claiming that she knew about it as Amarlin's seat?
No, she's saying that during her travels there, when her and Leanne and Min are traveling and, you know, after they escape the White Tower and they're traveling and they find Saladar, that Loghain tells.
Oh, but then she doesn't know if it's true or not.
No, but she made it up.
He didn't tell her the story.
No, I know,
she
but made it up. I know, but I'm saying, even yes, if even if they're believing her, she doesn't know if it's true because it's his story. She could say, "Yes, he told me that," but it's not like she knows
she
if
could.
It's true or not.
She
if
knows
it was
it's
true,
not.
If it really happened.
No, right.
Yeah, so, there's no evidence that is true.
But if an Aes Sedai only believed that it was true, but wasn't sure that it was true or whatever, they couldn't say, yes, this is true. I know that it is true, right? They can't say that because that's a lie, right? So if she's saying, I have found out the evidence that this is true, I know that this is true, this actually happened, right? To the other Aes Sedai, that's fact now. That's something that you can't walk around. And so that's the whole gambit, right? How she found that out or whatever is irrelevant. And you remember, before she was the Amarlin, she was the spymaster for the Blue Ajah.
Yeah, she was the head of the eyes and ears.
Right, so she is very, very skilled at this kind of intrigue and knows exactly how to play that to make it as impactful as possible. Now, I see some people on the chat are saying, well, maybe it really happened anyway because it's so awesome, and I'll take that. That because it is an awesome plot. But, like, I will say this, like, yeah, there's a lot of Reddit sisters who are bad, even if they're not evil. But one of the things that I like as the books go on is that they're also red sisters who are not bad. And that's
right.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, we get our good ones.
Yeah, and like, so I don't...
Sylviana, Pavara. Right? Pavara winds up being good. Yeah. Teslin, one of my favorites.
Yeah. Teslin really is one of your favorites.
She is. I like her a lot. She's, you know, she's close with Matt. She gets close with Matt.
She does.
Well, he's saved, right? She gets saved by Matt, right? She's one of the ones who gets saved.
Yeah, so. But then like they develop a mutual respect, which is probably possibly the weirdest relationship in the whole series.
No, there's some other weird relationship. I don't. Okay,
Matt being friends with a red sister is possibly—I'm not saying it's definitely—possibly the weirdest one.
It is him and it's her and Jolene that he becomes friends with. But yeah, that was always an interesting relationship. So I guess what I was – we know this is false, but I'm kind of wondering if they're going to lay groundwork early on for something like this. Like just throw in some things to make – if they play this storyline up later in later seasons, will they throw some, you know, hints in early on to kind of make you guess and make you think that this could be something that's true rather than just all of a sudden bring this theory in or this red herring in the middle of like season 4?
Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't
really
be
ask a question
able
there,
to not. They wouldn't be able to show you the beginning of his story. Well, I guess you're not going to see the actual beginning, but you wouldn't be able to see any of that, any of possibly the times when he was speaking to them, because then you would know that he wasn't. So they'd have to be very vague about his storyline.
Yeah, I think that they have to allow for the possibility of it being true, right? So maybe you, when you first see Loghain, he gets a message and you don't know who sends it. They have to have enough so that you, when this storyline comes up, because I do think if they get to this point that they're going to want to do that storyline, you don't want to go, well, that can't be true because we know it didn't happen, but you don't want to confirm it because it's not really true.
Yeah, and I don't even know how they would kind of set that up too. It's kind of an interesting thing to think about, but that's interesting, right? Because now it's like Rafe and the writers, are they thinking this far ahead, like thinking about these storylines that are coming up and, you know, later books and trying to lay the groundwork early on or not? I'm interested in that. That's got to be something tough.
Maybe that's why Sarah is there. To be like, that's, oh, maybe true. You shouldn't show this because this could conflict with the storyline later about Loghain being set up by Reds, because she knows everything.
Well, I don't know if she's involved in the writing. I think she's more of on the set. She didn't mention anything about writing at all. She mentioned more about filming. So, oh, one thing too, that brings me to something I missed. During the Sally Richardson Whitfield interview, she did mention that it's each episode was about 2 months prep time as well as 2 months of film time. So. Yeah. That was just something I left out there. So, all right. Any final thoughts on Loghain and your impressions of Alvaro Marte playing Loghain?
I'm excited about him. He seems like one of the more popular actors that they've cast after Rosamund. I like the way he looks. I never saw Money Heist, but I feel like now I have to watch it. And I like that he jumped in on that Twitter, the Winter is Coming bracket thing they had for the fantasy characters when Moraine was going against Lucifer. Yeah. And it was like neck and neck. He jumped in and retweeted it. So I like that. He got involved and I think he'll be good.
Yeah. He's definitely, so like I said, I started watching Money Heist. He's definitely very charismatic. I liked him. Aside from him being too old for Loghain, I'm sure I'll get past that at some point. Because again, I don't know why I have problems with people's ages for characters, but he's really good in it. I like him a lot. I think also that you pointed out, Jen, that he's going to bring a lot of international attention to the show, which is great. So looking forward to that.
20 some odd years ago, they made the movie Sphere, which don't watch it. But
I like that movie.
When I read the book Sphere, I was a Michael Crichton fan through the 90s, I would say. And when I read the book Sphere, I finished the book and I threw it across the room. That's how bad the end of that book is. And then they made a movie.
It's not that bad.
Oh, come on. I'm not going to get into that now. But the resolution is, let's all just imagine together that nothing happened. Anyway, so when they made the movie, I had hoped that it would be better and it wasn't. It was somehow worse. But it was the same ending with like bad special effects. But the point I wanted to make is that one of the characters in the book is a young mathematician. And like, it's a big deal. It's an important part of his character. And it's an important character element that he is very young. And like, other characters react to him as such. It changes the dynamics of the cast of characters in the book. And when they made the movie, they cast that character as Samuel L. Jackson, who it was not young when the movie came out. And Samuel Jackson is great, and he's good in the movie. But it changes a lot of the story for no particularly good reason. And I wasn't enthused about it when they made the cast decision, even though I love him as an actor, and I wasn't enthused about it watching the movie. I say all that to say that is not the impression that I have here. I think that you want to cast somebody who can make this character come to life without a lot of direct plot and without a lot of direct from the book scenes. So casting an actor who has a dynamic presence, who has a star wattage about him, and who, to my mind, other than age, looks the part, I think is a very good play. And I do like the fact that it seems again and again, as much as possible, they cast to find the right actor for the role, not the right look necessarily for the role. And then they can get the look, you know what I mean? Whatever. They can make Paul Rudd a superhero. They can make Alvaro Marte Loghain.
That's a good place to end it right there. They made Paul Rudd a superhero. They can make Alvaro Marte Loghain. Print that in the presses, Tom. You got to quote that somewhere.
There you go. That's our that's our videogram for this episode.
Yes. All right. So thanks everyone for listening. I just want to remind everyone to follow us on social media. All of our information is in the show notes, so check that out. Also, rate and review us. There's a link in the show notes as well for Apple Podcasts. We really appreciate if you rate and review us. Also, although you probably already know this, by the time this comes out, it'll be a week later, but I was on the Dusty Wheel on Wednesday, so go check out that episode. It was really fun.
It was.
We played the Wheel of Game Time show.
It was awesome, thing, Joe.
And we did some, yeah, we did some rant and raves, and it was awesome because there was also Katie Sedai was there, Josh from the Black Tower podcast, and also Brett from the Wheel Weaves podcast was also on it, and it was really fun to, you know, go back and forth with all of them. So go check that out. And if you didn't comment or you didn't give them a thumbs up or subscribe, go subscribe to the Dusty Wheel.
Yes.
It was a good time watching and even better being on that. So thanks to Matt for inviting me. I look forward to more. He also mentioned that, and I think we mentioned this last episode, that there's, you know, in the works, some online sort of con in development, probably sometime in the fall. So, you know, stay tuned for more news about that, because that's going to be a lot of fun. Check out Tom on Audio Dungeon. Right, Tom? Go ahead. You take it away for that part.
Sure. Yeah, check me out on Audio Dungeon. It is a live video webcast every Wednesday, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. On Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube, or you can watch after the fact. It's a lot of fun if you like Dungeons and Dragons or role-playing type games. We just finished up a huge arc, so you can now get a complete arc of the story. Or if you want to start kind of anew, next week is a great episode to start because we just finished up a huge arc, so we're starting a new storyline. I play a wizard named Findelar Lockdawn, and what's better than that? Seeing me cast Fireball and blow some stuff up.
And Jen, you're working on a side project with Andril the Bard, right?
I am. I don't know how much I should give away. If you were on Twitter this week, you saw we were collaborating on a song, a playoff of one of the headlines in the Weekly Wheel News this week. So stay tuned for that. This should be coming out maybe slightly after this episode is released. So definitely keep your eye on Twitter for that one.
Yes, looking forward to hearing and seeing that.
Also,
that kind of just...
I want to say we also posted one of Jen's other side projects is Motherless Goats. They did a cover song and we put that out. So check our Twitter timeline like earlier this week. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No problem.
All right. Everyone, stay safe. Like I said before, things are getting better. So just hang in there. It's going to get better. We're going to get summer. And, you know, I don't know what else to say about that. But
yeah, thanks to everybody who's out there on the front lines, you know, helping keep the rest of us safe. Yeah, just stay strong. We're all behind you. Close it out, Joe.
Yeah, one thing, too. I wanted to mention one last thing. I forgot about it. So usually we get in May, there's National Nurses Week. So they decided to extend it to the whole month of May.
Yes.
So May is National Nurses Month. So thank you to all the nurses out there. Yep. If you guys know anybody, any nurses, you have friends, family, or you just want to say thank you, go out on social media and say thank you to all the nurses out there. Mm-hmm. Tom and I work with tons of nurses.
Yeah, my mom's a nurse, too.
We know... Yeah, and your mother's a nurse. That's right. My sister-in-law's a nurse, you know. So I'm sure everybody has a relative or a friend who's a nurse. So say thank you for what they're doing right now.
Yeah.
It's National Nurses Month. So thank you to all of you nurses out there. I think that's all I've got. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and you'll hear us next time.